If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
This is the Spurs Cast with your host, Paul Garcia.
And welcome back to another episode of the Spurs Cast. In today's episode, I'll be discussing Victor Wembanyama's chances of making one of the all-defensive teams, the Spurs' last four games, and the final nine games of the regular season for the San Antonio Spurs. It's going to jump right into this episode. So it's been about a little over a week since I last recorded an episode right before March Madness began last week with Benjamin Bornstein. So today's topic is, I kind of had a question of, what are Wemby's chances of making the all-defensive team? So the way I'm doing this is I am going to more so look at it through a statistical perspective. So what I did was I'll kind of just go through the approach of how I got these stats and the players that I picked, and then I'll show you. I'll definitely display these stats for you, all those of you that are watching on video format, and for those that are listening, I'll just name the players. So what I did was I went to all I went first to defensive rating, because that's kind of where I'm first beginning this list, is, you know, looking at the top defensive teams from one, or just the defensive teams from 1 to 30. And then from there, I'm kind of just picking some names of players, you know, who you would just think, just watching games, who's the standout defender for that team, or also just players that I've heard mentioned on different kind of podcasts or different podcasts that are potentially, you know, defensive player nominees. Then when I found the player, I went and I started putting in their stats across this page here. I did have to check the game. So you're going to see some players who are like in the cell for the games. It's going to say, you know, if they've played over 65 games, which is the mark you need to reach the criteria to be considered for one of these all defensive teams, then that player's name is in that green kind of color there. If the player is not in green, well, then they're very close to making, you know, qualifying for the 65 game mark. So just talking about a player like Wemby, he's almost there. He's right now, he's at 64 games played. So again, he just needs to play in one more game, and then he's going to qualify for, you know, one of these all defensive teams. So again, there's a few players on this page that aren't yet at that 65 game mark, but they should get there, because again, there's like 9 or 10 games left for almost every team here in the league. So I'm going to begin by going through some of the teams first, where they rank defensively, and then talking about the players that I put into this list. So for the number one defense, it's the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I put two players here, Rudy Gobert and Jaden McDaniels. For the Boston Celtics, they're ranked second defensively, and so I put two players for them, Derek White and Jrue Holiday. For the Orlando Magic, they're ranked third. Here I put Jalen Suggs. For the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're ranked fourth. I put Jared Allen. For the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're ranked fifth. So I put two players here. I put Chet Holmgren and also Lu Dort. For the New Orleans Pelicans, they're ranked sixth. I put Herb Jones there. For the New York Knicks, they're ranked seventh. I put Isaiah Hartenstein. For the Houston Rockets, they're eighth. I put Dylan Brooks. For the Miami Heat, they're ninth. I put Bam Adebayo. For the Denver Nuggets, they're ranked 10th defensively. I put Aaron Gordon. For the Memphis Grizzlies, they're 11th. I put Jaren Jackson Jr., the defending defensive player of the year, or the previous winner of that award. For the Milwaukee Bucks, they're ranked 14th, so basically right at league average. I put both Brook Lopez and Giannis Antetokounmpo. For the Los Angeles Lakers, they're ranked 17th. I put Anthony Davis. For the Clippers, they're ranked 18th. I put Kawhi Leonard. For the Chicago Bulls, they're ranked 19th. I put Alex Caruso. The Spurs, I have Wemby there, and the Spurs are ranked 22nd as of me collecting this data on Thursday evening, right at 5 p.m. Mountain Time, before a lot of the games get started in the NBA. And then finally, I have Walker Kessler, who's on the Jazz, who are ranked dead last in the NBA at 30th. So again, two players here in the bottom 10 that I put on this list, and that's Walker Kessler and Wemby, who are both there. But even players, I would say Brook Lopez, Giannis, Anthony Davis, Kawhi, Alex Caruso, a lot of those players too, they're not on great defenses either. I mean, they're below league average, basically, where their team's defensive rank is. So again, I think that when we say, yes, Wemby's on a bottom 10 defense, he's not that far. You know, the Spurs aren't that far behind some of these other teams there as well. They're not exactly a top 5, top 10 type of defense. Okay, so then what I did was after I once I got the players, again, I put in their stats. And so now I'm going to kind of go through the stats, just the main stats that I'm paying attention to. I am looking more so at a per game basis. So I have the players' minutes that they played, their defensive rebounds, steals, blocks, personal fouls. And then going a little bit further into the hustle stats by the NBA, I provided deflections per game, charges per game, and contested shots per game. And then using synergy, I went ahead and put three different categories here. I put pick and roll, defending the pick and roll ball handler, the points per possession, defending the pick and roll role man, and then also the isolation numbers per synergy. So one thing I do want to note about the pick and roll ball handler and the role man is that you have to be very careful about how you look at this data. For one, the pick and roll ball handler, there's not every player has data. The NBA didn't have enough data there when I pulled up the player's name. And then two, you got to look at it more so of where do they play on the floor. If they're a guard, then pick and roll ball handler, that's a very meaningful stat for that player. A wing kind of player who plays out on the perimeter. If it's a big and, they have a good or a bad number, you don't want to put too much stock in that just because they don't have as many possessions up there, guarding up top. Same thing, vice versa with the role man data. If you see a guard with really good numbers in the pick and roll role man, just consider that the possessions are very few for that player. Whereas a big, that's a very, key stat because bigs are, around the rim, they're protecting the paint on those rolling kind of possessions. And then also ISO, again, this is more so weighted toward the guards. You really want to pay more attention to that number there if it's for a guard that has a really good number or a bad number. Whereas a big, they don't get ISO'd as often as maybe a guard does. So again, that's kind of just something to watch there. And then finally, the last stat that I really paid attention to was I used cleaning the glass off on numbers there, on off stats of your defensive rating, your team's defensive rating when you're on the floor and you're off the floor. And so that's where I got that number from. And that's going to be definitely one of the ones that Wemby sticks out from. So what I begin here was I just put I put all the players into the on off stat. As we see here, I mean, Wemby across the board, when you do it this way, of course, he has the best on off numbers there defensively compared to every player on this list. The Spurs, when he's on the floor, the Spurs are holding to teams to 11.2 points per 100 fewer points per 100 out there on the floor. So again, that one already, he's number one amongst these players that are on this list. He's number one right there. And so from there, I just kind of followed along. I kind of wanted to see, I have them colored in green and red, the stats basically. So if you're in green, it means you stick out compared to all these other players in this statistical category. Whereas if you're in red or dark red, that means that, this is one of the areas where you struggle compared to these other players. And so honestly, like if you just look at every player on this list, Wemby is across the board in almost every cell. He's got the green. So he's standing out amongst guards, amongst bigs, in all sorts of different stats in defensive rebounds. He's right there at the top with some of the other bigs. Steals, the fact that he's a big, he's right there, standing out there. Blocks, of course, we know he's the leader in the league right now at 3.5 blocks per game. He's number one in blocks. And not fouling often, again, 2.2 fouls per game. He stands out there compared to other players that he's ranked with on this list. Deflections, he's second behind only Alex Caruso in deflections per game amongst player on this list. Caruso's at 3.7, Wemby's at 2.9. You could also say Kawhi Leonard's also tied there at second with 2.9 as well. Charges, a lot of these players, charges don't get more than one per game. But again, Wemby sticks out in charges. I mean, he actually sticks out here that he's, he compared to some of these other players. Yeah, he is there at the top near in charges. Contested shots. This is a key one that I've mentioned before when comparing Wemby to his own, Spurs bigs like Zach Collins or Dominic Barlow. We always saw that Zach Collins and Barlow had higher players, shot more against them. Their contested shot numbers were always higher than Wemby's. And I think that's one of those stats that kind of paints that picture of, you see that teams are kind of afraid to go at Wemby to actually take the ball against him. And a perfect example of this was that this most recent game against Memphis when two players, Wemby's underneath the rim and one player kind of sees him, he kind of hovers over, he passes out, and then the next player gets the ball and he sees Wemby and he tails off as well. And so that's one of those visual things that we see with the eye test. It's right there in front of us that players are, they're not going to go at Wemby if he's right there and they can obviously see him right there. And so I think that's one thing that one of those stats right there that kind of paints that picture, the fact that the contested shot numbers, you look at Brook Lopez, he's got the highest number here at 16.2. And then you look at all the other bigs, you look at player like Walker Kessler, 11.2, Chet Holmgren's at 12.1, Anthony Davis, 11.3. Gobert is at 11.2. I'm sorry, Kessler was at 10.6. So again, all these players, these traditional bigs out there on the floor, like just like Wemby, it's showing that, you know, they get a lot more contested shots. So it's showing there that I think that a lot of players are willing to at least try to attack those players. And the fact that Wemby has the lowest amount there, even though he is the Spurs' starting center since basically like December onward, he's been their starting center. That kind of shows that you know, even with all his minutes out there, the teams aren't willing to go at him if they see him right there. They're not going to try to attack him most often. And so again, I think that's one of those stats, those key stats that paints that picture. Wemby ranks well in the pick and roll ball handler numbers, but like I said, he's a big, he doesn't get that many opportunities to do that. So I wouldn't put too much stock into that one. And then the role man one too, that one's a little, he's at 1.18. So again, that's probably the one area where he's not leading the pack. And then also the ISO numbers. But again, ISO's possessions are very, very, very few. So again, when you just look at this visually, he's going to outrank a lot of these players in different stats, or he's near the top basically. And so I think that when I talk about some of the players on this list of who might get on the defensive teams, it's really hard to argue just from a statistical perspective. It's very difficult to argue that so-and-so is should be in over Wemby from a statistical perspective. Cause again, he's dominated almost every stat here on this board. The area, of course, that I've talked about before that's going to hurt him, and these chances are not, it's not even his fault. It's just the team that he's on and where they rank defensively. The fact that the Spurs are a bottom 10 team defensively, they're ranked 22nd, which is a big improvement compared to last year where they were 30th. But again, that may end up hurting his cause. But again, I think that if some of these other players get in ahead of him who are also on bad defenses, you know, like I said, Kawhi Leonard, Brooke Lopez, Caruso, let's see here, Anthony Davis, these are all players. These are good defenders, obviously, as well, but they're not on stellar defenses either. So again, if these players get in, you know, what was that argument made when from a statistical perspective, you see that Wemby has these numbers that are just above everybody else. And then the fact that the eye test proves as well. I mean, we see it every night. You hear players talking about just kind of his presence around the rim, the difference he's already making, and then also just the visuals. I mean, you see how he blocks shots, how players are afraid to go at him. So using these same numbers, what I did next was I kind of just show the way that this looks from the defensive rank perspective in terms of the teams. So again, when you rank all these players on their defensive where their teams rank defensively, of course, you are going to notice that Wemby's there at the bottom, toward the bottom, because again, the Spurs were a bad defense at 22nd. But just again, look at it from that ranking view, you know, up to down, and then look at it from a left to right perspective, and you do see that again amongst those the players that are on the bad defensive teams, Wemby's the one player out there who really, you know, his stats just stick out. The fact that he's just green across the board, which are positive, you know, standing out against some of these other players. So I think that's one way to also see that. Yes, we know he's on a bad defensive team, but when he's out there on the floor, like he's dominating out there is what these numbers are showing. And so what I started to do, I was going to try to just pick 10 players. I mean, that's really difficult for me. Luckily, I don't have a vote, you know, as NBA media. I'm glad I don't, because this will be a very tough exercise to do. You know, that's going to be something that the media voters have to actually do and go through and make a list of 10 players here. But I was just trying to see if more so like who is a lock ahead of that I would say ahead of Wemby, or even not even ahead of Wemby, but just kind of where I think voters might go. They might go to a more traditional, you know, looking at some of the top players on top teams, maybe like right now, Rudy Gobert is probably the favorite for defensive player of the year. And so when I started doing this, looking at players to put onto a list, I only came up with three players who I think are for sure locks on the all defensive teams, whether it's first or second. Rudy Gobert, just because, again, we've heard the narrative about how he's going to be the defensive player of the year this year. I mean, it's hard to argue against him. Like, again, his numbers from where the guards are at obviously aren't great, you know, because that's not his job to play like a guard and get some of those defensive numbers. But we see the rebounding, the contesting shots, some of the defense at the rim are where he sticks out, of course. And then, of course, he's on the number one defensive team. It's hard to argue against a player who's on the number one defensive team. I think another player who really sticks out when you both look at numbers, you look at the eye test, and he's a lockdown defender. He gets one of the toughest assignments every night is Herb Jones of the New Orleans Pelicans. Right now, the Pels are ranked sixth out there defensively. And then also I think Bam Adebayo, you know, the Heat are ranked ninth defensively. We know Bam's like their sole anchor there defensively. He's healthy most of the year all the time. He's actually up to 61 games, so he's almost going to hit that 65 game mark. And again, you know, for him, he's actually a player who sticks out in both, you know, perimeter numbers plus interior numbers, where Bam kind of sticks out there. So I think those three players are locks. Now again, the Celtics will get some players on the defensive team. I think the Magic will as well. the Thunder as well. So for me, it's more so I wonder if voters will have to make a choice of, you know, do they give the spot, one spot to Derek White or Jrue Holiday? I don't think they would give it to both players, even though the Celtics are ranked second defensively. Same thing for the Magic. Are they going to give that spot to Jalen Suggs? The Thunder as well. Are they going to give it to Chet Holmgren or Lou Dort? I feel like they have to make the voters have to make a choice of one of those two players. So again, aside from Gobert, Herb Jones, and Bam, I really don't see how you know, it's going to be a tough call for voters to make a choice of saying Wemby doesn't belong on this team. I think that there's plenty of room for him. And so I think that that's just the interesting part. One thing I wanted to mention too before I close out this topic is, again, we look at some numbers. You know, you can basically look at where the guards stick out in numbers because they're supposed to, like steals, deflections, charges. Maybe that's where a guard would normally stick out. And then you look at areas where bigs would stick out: defensive rebounds, blocks. Let's see here, contested shots. Okay, all those kind of numbers. So again, there's like two different places that you can put these players into. You know, the guards and the wings, and you can put the bigs. The unique thing about Wemby when you're looking at this data is that he sticks out in the guard numbers as well as the big numbers. That's what I think is so unique about him and why it is a tough sell to say, you know, he doesn't belong on one of these defensive teams, because, you know, he's impacting, you know, outside and inside the paint. You know, it's happening at different areas. And again, just the numbers are right there in front of you, just showing that what he's doing. And then I think another key thing for him, again, I keep coming to all these different conclusions, is look at his minutes played. So I have the minutes listed for all the players. If the player's in orange, it means that they play a lot more minutes compared to these other players. If the player's in blue, it means that they play a lot fewer minutes. And so again, we know that Wemby is has been, you know, on a minutes restriction earlier in the year. He's off that minutes restriction now, but at some point when he was going through some injuries, he was put on a minutes restriction. He's still a rookie, so the Spurs aren't giving him a lot of minutes just quite yet. And look at that, in just 29 minutes a night, he sticks out again across the board in all these minutes on a per night basis. So basically, even though he's playing fewer minutes, he's producing more per game numbers in some of these different areas than players who are getting, you know, 35 minutes a night, 30, 33 minutes a night. So again, that's another thing that I think is key, is that you have to consider is that he's not even out on the floor for a huge duration of the game. However, he's already put, you know, getting these kind of numbers and surpassing some of these players despite getting such few minutes. So again, that's kind of just what I wanted to do in this topic. Again, I'm not 100% sure that he'll make one of these all defensive teams, but I would just say that when you look at it from a statistical perspective, when you look at it from the eye test, what we see out there on the court every night, it is hard to argue against Wemby to make a case against him from over some of these other players. Again, if you're going to do it, it means you're really weighing heavily on this fact that the Spurs ranked 22nd defensively. And even in that, I would say that's a huge improvement. Just the fact that they were dead last year, they were basically where the Jazz are now. And now look where they've gone. They moved up 8 spots. By the end of the year, they may end up, you know, within the top 20. I think that, you know, there's a chance maybe they get to 19th, 18th, who knows. So, again, that's kind of what I want to do on this topic, was just kind of explore his chances. I feel like from a statistical perspective, an eye test perspective, there's a good chance that he could get onto one of these two teams. Again, it's going to be very difficult for the voters to say no. The fact that every night he's having a highlight play of blocking somebody and just all the kind of things that he's doing out there on the floor. And then not only that, it's like the numbers also support what you're seeing there with the eye test.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
All right, so for this next topic, I would just like to review the Spurs' last four games, because it has been a little bit over a week since I last recorded SpursCast. So let's go back to last Friday. The Spurs are at home in San Antonio against the Memphis Grizzlies, who you know, if you saw their roster, they're missing a lot of players due to injury. And so this is a game that the Spurs should have won. They were actually favored by 6.5, the most they've been favored by in a game this season. And they actually led by 17 in this game. But at the end of the day, the Spurs actually didn't win this game. Memphis ends up winning a close one by 2 points. So again, this was one where the Spurs should have won. They ended up losing. Then on Saturday, the Spurs played the Phoenix Suns for the first time with their entire team of the Suns. You know, they had Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant all in the same game. And, you know, this is one where the Spurs struggled. It was pretty over pretty early after like the first quarter that the Suns ended up going up like 30 plus, and they ended up winning in a blowout. Then one of the Spurs' more surprising wins of the season came on Monday night. So they're playing the Suns again in one of those baseball series, you know, a home and home hosting Phoenix. And for this game, Victor Wembanyama was announced that he was going to be out. I think it was an ankle sprain, a left ankle sprain. So Wemby was out of this game. And the Spurs ended up doing a great job defensively against the Suns, playing against them. And they ended up defeating the Suns there in crunch time, and they ended up winning by 2 points, the Spurs. So they beat the Suns, even though the Suns had all their players again. Beal, Durant, Devin Booker were all present. And the way they did this was, one, again, like I mentioned, their defense was really key in this game against the Suns. Devin Vassell had a great game with 26 points and 7 assists. And then Jeremy Sochan had a career night in the rebounding department. Sochan goes for 18 career-high rebounds along with 26 points. And not only that, he had been struggling from three, like in three or four games straight. I'm just struggling to make a three ball. We saw how teams have been leaving him open on purpose. And he actually ends up taking one of the key threes and makes it late in the game. And it ends up being the go-ahead basket where San Antonio ends up winning the game because of Jeremy's made three. And then one thing that, you know, Bradley Beal did say, you know, and this is something that Frank Vogel, the coach of the Suns, were both afraid of, was the fact that, you know, the scene that the Spurs were without Wemby, they thought this could be an easy win, especially after the Suns had just blown out the Spurs with Wemby by 25 points. So again, there's more so like that letdown factor on the Suns' part, where they weren't ready, they weren't motivated, and they didn't take it seriously. And the Spurs came out and they beat them. And so that was something that Bradley Beal did mention, that the Suns weren't entirely locked in for that game. They kind of just tried to turn it on there at the end, and they couldn't get it done. San Antonio held on. And I think that's one thing that I would just note that we've seen with the Spurs whenever Wemby is out, is that I wouldn't say that they play better. I would just say that teams don't really there's two things that happen whenever the Spurs don't have Wemby in games, because again, they beat the Warriors without Wemby, and then they almost beat the Sacramento Kings in a recent game without Wemby. I think there's two things for that part of, what's part of that. One is like what Beal said, kind of the letdown where teams aren't, you know, 100% ready to go against the Spurs group. If Wemby's not on the floor, you know, that opponent is heavily favored against San Antonio whenever Wemby's not there. So that's part of it. It's like their mindset's not quite right, the opposing team. Part two is that I think that, you know, for defenses, they have a little bit tougher time of how to guard the Spurs whenever Wemby's not there, because, you know, what we see from every team is that their whole focus defensively is just to try to stop Wemby, make it, you know, have multiple bodies near him in the paint, you know, always have players backing off the Spurs' three-point shooters, some of them, and, you know, just making it difficult for Wemby. I think that when a team's so focused on one player, which is like, you know, that's how you make that game plan, then it's a little bit different to prep for a team that, you know, hasn't had a lot of games without Wemby this year. And so I think that's where the Spurs can catch some teams by surprise, where, like, you know, now all of a sudden Jeremy Sochan's getting different, a lot more shots. Devin Vassell's getting a lot more shots. Keldon Johnson, if he's in the game, might get more shots. Zach Collins has been playing well lately, getting some shots up as well. So I think that it's just a little bit harder for defenses to prepare when Wemby's not there. But again, if that was the situation for a full season, well, then we know that, you know, that teams would figure out the Spurs and they wouldn't catch those opponents like that, you know, a little bit surprised, I would say. And then the Spurs' most recent win came also on Wednesday to win their second game in a row, where they went back on the road. They beat the Utah Jazz by 19. I mean, they didn't beat them by 19 points. They won by 7 points. They did lead by 19, though. The Jazz did make a little bit of a comeback. They were kind of just, they would have let the Spurs kind of quite pull away with that win. But the San Antonio did hold on there down the stretch, and they ended up winning by 7 points. Vassell again had a great night again on offense with 31 points. And even defensively, Coach Pop mentioned how he was had the responsibility of guarding Colin Sexton for a big chunk of that night. And so he ends up with 31 points, scored all over the floor from mid-range, the paint, three-point line, free throw line. And then Wemby also had a good night here with 19 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, and on the box score it says 5 blocks, but honestly, if you're watching the game, two of those blocks, it looks like they might have missed two blocks of the Jazz statisticians. So there was a play in the first, I think it was like the first quarter, where I think it was Sexton takes like a mid-range jumper, and all of a sudden the ball just sails, and it goes, it's an air ball. Like it misses the rim by like a foot probably. And you know, they didn't, I had thought, just watching, because Wemby was contesting, I thought Wemby got a block, and no, he never got credit for that. And so that was one potential missed block. And then another one happened in the fourth quarter, right when the game was about to end. One of the Jazz players was trying to score against the Spurs. I think it was Taylor Hendricks. And both Wemby and Sochan go up to try to block the shot. And again, when you just watch it with the eye test without, you know, slowing down or anything, or going back and watching, it looks like Wemby got that shot as well. But at the end of the night, the Jazz statisticians or the NBA ended up crediting that block to Sochan. So Wemby did end up with 5 blocks on the night, which is still a lot. Again, 5 blocks. He's done that now 21 times in just 64 games played. So it's like about 33% of his games, he's getting five or more blocks in his game. So again, that's another argument for him making the defensive team. The fact that just his blocks are, you know, just off the charts compared to any other player, whether it's a rookie or a veteran right now in the league right now for the season. All right, so now for this final topic, before we close out this episode, I just kind of want to explore the Spurs' final nine games. So we are down to the last nine games for the San Antonio. As you know, they're a bottom three team by record, so they've already been eliminated from playoff contention. So that's obviously gone from the picture. There's two things that could happen with the Spurs in these final nine games. Like one, they could try to avoid the worst record in franchise history. There's a better chance that they can avoid that. And then two, they might actually make their odds for the lottery pick a little bit worse if they keep winning games like they've been doing. So let's first talk about the final nine opponents. So they have the Knicks on Friday, then they got the Warriors at home. Then they have they go on the road for two games against Denver and New Orleans. Then they go back home to San Antonio. They play Philly in their fifth game. Then they go back on the road for two games against at Memphis and then at OKC. And then their final two games of the season are in San Antonio against the Denver Nuggets and then the Detroit Pistons to close out the year. So again, very tough schedule still, a lot of really good teams out there. Maybe the only two teams who you would expect the Spurs to be favored against are going to be Memphis and Detroit. So again, they need some of those, they would need some surprise wins to try to avoid the worst record in franchise history. So what do they have to do to avoid that record? Right now, they sit with 17 wins, I believe. Yeah, they have 17 wins right now. So right now they would need to go 3-6 in their final nine games. If they can go 3-6, they'll get to 20 wins, which would tie the 1996-97 team the year before they got Tim Duncan. That was the worst team in franchise history, according to record. So again, they can avoid that of being the worst team in franchise history with the worst record if they can just win three of these final nine games. And like I said, if they can beat Memphis, if they can beat Detroit, that knocks out two of those wins. And then they've shown that they can get some of these surprising wins, like they just beat Phoenix recently. So if they can get one of those surprising wins against one of these games where they're going to be underdogged, well, then again, they have a very good chance of avoiding that record. Now, regarding their lottery positioning, they still have the third worst record. They've kind of, since they've been winning more games than both Washington and Detroit, they've kind of got some room where Washington and Detroit will finish with most likely the bottom two records. But again, all you got to do is be bottom three to have the best chance of lottery odds at 14% lottery odds for the number one pick. The teams that they do got to watch if they are going to keep winning San Antonio is the Charlotte Hornets and also the Portland Trailblazers. So the Hornets are just 1.5 games behind San Antonio as I'm recording this at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. They are 18-54 overall, and they have the fourth worst record, like I mentioned. And they're actually, just like San Antonio, they're kind of winning some games here late in the last 10. So they're currently 3-7 in their last 10. The Spurs are 4-6 in their last 10. The Trailblazers are one of those sneaky teams to watch. Right now, they're only two games behind San Antonio in the standings, or ahead of San Antonio in the standings. And they're 19-54. They have the fifth worst record, but they are struggling right now. The Blazers are 1-9 in their last 10 games. So again, that's a team that if the Spurs keep winning or getting some wins, then Portland, it keeps losing. That's a team to watch there. And then regarding the Spurs' other potential lottery pick, which is the pick from the Raptors, just to review, it has to, after the lottery is done, if Toronto's within 1 through 6, then they get to keep their pick. If the pick is 7 through 14, well, then it goes to San Antonio. So basically the Spurs are hoping that it lands in that 7 through 14 range for them to keep it. But the Raptors right now look like they're going to try to, not on purpose, they're obviously dealing with injuries and so some roster issues here, but yeah, they're really struggling here. So right now they are, when we look at the standings, they have the sixth worst record. And they're currently on a 12-game losing streak. So the Raptors do have a 12-game losing streak going on right now, which is giving the Grizzlies, who are seventh right now in the standings, they have a little bit more room to so Toronto's getting a little bit more separation from Memphis there. I don't think Toronto will catch where the Blazers are at, because like I mentioned, the Blazers are struggling as well. But again, it's really going to come down to the lottery in terms of whether or not the Spurs are going to get that Raptors pick. It's going to really just depend on where the lottery balls end up. All right, thank you for taking some time to listen to this episode of the Spurs Cast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review on YouTube and your favorite podcast apps. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Paul Garcia. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.